Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
With Bernstein and Harris on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let's talk some football with Pro Football Talk himself. Mike Florio is with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Hello, Mike.
What's up? How's everybody?
Well, the Chiefs are better now that they've apparently are set to add a veteran wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. What's the significance of this? Did anybody see this coming?
Well, I think it was one of those, you connect the dots, you know who's available, who's not available, who might be moved, who might not be moved. And the Chiefs continued to replace key players with former Chiefs players. They lose Isaiah Pacheco, they bring in Kareem Hunt. They need help at receiver, they bring back Juju Smith-Schuster. Now that Smith-Schuster's out, they finally reached the point where there's no one left in the well. They're not bringing back Sammy Watkins to play receiver for the Chiefs, so they had to go out and make a trade. And it shows you that I think they have a level of concern that they're reaching critical mass with these injuries to try to make the offense as good as it can be. And if Hopkins works out, I think he's got a higher ceiling right now than Juju Smith-Schuster. You've got Xavier Worthy and ideally Sky Moore, potentially. I don't know. You got guys who can take defenses deep. You need guys who can work the underneath stuff, and Hopkins can still do that at a high level. He and Travis Kelce together gives the offense a chance to get better. Not that the offense has to be all that great. You look at Mahomes' stats this year, you'd think this team is 500 at best. They've become a defensive team before our eyes, and they're winning those games because they're able to clamp down on opposing offenses.
Well, I also want to ask this. We see the action the Chiefs have taken when it comes to where they think they are. But what have you heard about where they think they are as far as their chances? Do they think that adding this is the missing piece? Are they concerned that they may do something else before the trade deadline?
I think actions always speak louder than words when it comes to the NFL and the moves that teams make or don't make. And there are teams that will nudge the chips into the middle of the table from time to time. Ideally, the Chiefs would like to hold on to their draft picks. Most of the properly functional teams would. But they've won two in a row. They have a chance to make history. They're 6-0 somehow. Those wins are money in the bank. They know they need to get better if they're going to be ready for the single elimination round. They kind of sleepwalk their way through the regular season. It's amazing they've won 6 in a row. The reality, though, is they know how to bend an outcome their way in crunch time of a game. They've done it so often in the postseason. They're starting to figure out how to do it regularly in the regular season. They just want to peak at the right time because they're going to have to beat the Ravens and or the Bills. And who knows who else is going to bubble up as real contenders in the AFC. That's what they're trying to be prepared for. So you get DeAndre Hopkins now. You have time to get him up to speed. By the time we get to the key stage of the regular season and then the postseason, that they'll be ready to compete. This is an indication, even though they don't talk about it very much, they realize they're on the brink of history. And they've gotten off to a great start, better than anyone else from a wins and losses standpoint. And they want to keep it going because they want to be that team that climbs the mountain for the third time.
Seems like a lot of teams want to do some climbing. Clearly, there's a bunch of teams already offloading. Less than 2 weeks from the trade deadline, do we expect even more activity as we get closer? I mean, it's amazing to me just how far we've come in the last 5 years or so and how active teams are at the deadline, especially here in Chicago. We've seen Ryan Poles be both a buyer and a seller heading to the deadline. I'm just curious if it looks like we're trending that way again.
We've already seen plenty of moves. The question becomes, will we see all the moves that are going to be made before we even get to the deadline? But this year is the first year that it comes the Tuesday after week 9. So there's still two more weekends of football. An injury to a key player on a contending team can change everything. It was last year that on October 29, Kirk Cousins tears the Achilles tendon. The Vikings scramble to find a quarterback. They ultimately trade with the Cardinals for Josh Dobbs. Was it the Cardinals or the Browns? He'd been on the Browns. He went to the Cardinals. I think it was the Cardinals. I can't remember. The bottom line
is it was the Cardinals.
They traded for Josh Dobbs. This year, and I'm keeping an eye, look, if the Rams are entertaining the possibility of trading Super Bowl 56 MVP Cooper Kupp Why aren't they thinking about trading Matthew Stafford? And I think if a quarterback on a contending team gets injured this weekend, and we see how easy it is. Deshaun Watson, the Achilles tendon goes snap. You can see it on the video. Just like Cousins last year, there goes the Achilles tendon. If that happens to a quarterback on a contending team, and I'm not going to name names for fear of being accused of jinxing anyone, if it happens, boom, there's a market for Stafford out of nowhere. So two more weekends of games, key injury to a key player on a contending team, and there might even be more names that get thrown into the mix and deals happen quickly. 2011, week six, I think it was at the time, Jason Campbell, quarterback of the Raiders, breaks a collarbone. The Bengals and Carson Palmer are at impasse. He doesn't want to play for them. They don't want to let him go. They don't want to trade him. All of a sudden, there's a market for the Raiders to give up a lot to get Carson Palmer. So it can happen this weekend or next weekend, and all of a sudden, there'll be a big name on the move.
It's too early for this, but I don't care. Do you think Jared Goff is playing like an MVP right now?
Well, yeah, he's playing like an MVP. And look, here's the thing to remember about the MVP award. It typically goes to the quarterback of one of the teams that finish with a playoff bye. Now that there's only one team per conference that gets a bye, you're looking at two teams, the one seed in the AFC, the one seed in the NFC, whoever that ultimately is. The MVP likely will be the quarterback of one of those two teams, because when are the votes being cast? In the immediate aftermath of the conclusion of the regular season, when the playoff tree is set, when we know the teams that have the bye, and there's an extra layer of special that comes from that. So if the Lions end up with a one seed, Goff's an MVP finalist. And if it's the Lions and the Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes continues to have more interceptions than touchdowns, whoever the number one seed is in the NFC, that quarterback becomes the MVP. But I'll say this. Derrick Henry threw seven games on pace to set the single season rushing record. If he does that, then you've got the Adrian Peterson dynamic where he kind of slipped in the final weeks of the season, almost caught Eric Dickerson in a 16-game season, won MVP over Peyton Manning. That's possible. And the other dynamic that I think is worth watching, we're hearing Lamar Jackson is an MVP candidate. Well, if Henry has that huge rushing total, do they split votes and open the door for someone else?
When I heard Tua Tagovailoa say, what was it? I love this game. I love it to the death of me. That's it. I don't know if he meant that to be as dark and fatalistic as it came across, but that I found kind of chilling. Did you?
Everything about his press conference on Monday on the topic of concussions was concerning to me. Because he understands, I believe, he can't act like he's concerned. If you act like you're concerned, you're inviting opposing defenses to be even more aggressive in their attempt to make your fears come to fruition. We don't talk about that dynamic anymore post-Bounty from 2012, but it's been part of football ever since they realized, hey, the quarterback can really be a difference maker by throwing the football all over the place. And we know how much better the Dolphins' offense is with Tua than without him. I also think he's trying to convince himself not to think about it. Because if you think about it too much, you manifest it. We hear all the time, the guys who get injured are the ones who worry about getting injured. But he needs to worry about exposing himself to unnecessary contact. All last year was he learned how to fall by doing jiu-jitsu or judo, and he put on weight, and he's got the special helmet, and he's not going to hit his head on the ground, and it worked. Now this year, week two, trying to make something happen in a game where they're well behind the Bills, drops his shoulder into DeMar Hamlin, hits his helmet, jams his neck, gets a concussion. The key for him is, will he change his playing style to someone who does everything he can to avoid taking blows to the head? Because which concussion is the last one? Which is the one that they say, you know what, Tua, we can't clear you to play anymore? I don't know. And we've never seen this in the 15 years that the NFL became extra sensitive to concussions, if they were sensitive to concussions at all. You've got a player who's got a propensity to get concussions, propensity to go into the fencing posture. I feel like someone needs to protect him from himself on one hand. On the other hand, I say, hey, people in this country take far greater risks for far less money. People jump out of airplanes. They ride motorcycles without helmets. They go rock climbing. We engage in unsafe, risky behaviors. We're allowed to do that. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness includes the right to screw your life up if you choose to do so. At a certain point, you say, The man's an adult. If he wants to do it, let him do it. I just think some of these other concerns are real, and I think it's responsible to be sensitive to them if you cover the sport.
So looking at the way the Bears matchup is this weekend, all the talk here in Chicago is about the fact that this game got flexed. And I'm just curious, from a national perspective, a national point of view, how much more weight can a game like this merit for the opinions of people on the outside looking in for teams like the Bears and the Commanders, depending on what happens? Like, just how much extra weight can that carry being in a window such as this where everybody is able to watch?
Yeah, I think that when you slide into a spot where it becomes a game that 25 million or more watch, it's an opportunity to show everyone that you've arrived. We saw it in week two with the Bears, the Sunday night game against the Texans. It didn't go well. The offense sputtered. And the hype for Caleb Williams kind of bottomed out. So he went from being hyped too much. Now he's not being hyped enough. And maybe at some point he'll be hyped just right. And I think this game will help. And the other factor is, are we going to see Jaden Daniels? This battle of number one versus number two in the 2024 draft, maybe number one 2024 versus number two 2015, because it'll be Marcus Mariota. I reported on Football Night in America the level of concern in the Washington franchise on a scale of 1 to 10 for that rib injury that Daniel suffered on the first drive of the game on Sunday against the Panthers is 3 or 4. And when they say he's week to week, anytime somebody's week to week, they usually miss 1 week. It's day to day that you've got a chance to be back that weekend. Week to week kind of implies this week it isn't happening, so we'll
see.
That's
what I thought. Everybody shouted me down on that one, but I thought that
I thought day to day meant game, or week to week meant game in this case.
But I understand that football's different because there is only one game a week. But to choose to have that be the first thing you say, rather than, oh, we'll evaluate game time decision, it sounded more certain that he was going to miss this week. But again, I don't know the rules anymore.
So Mike, you would expect him not to play then?
Here's the question. Is Dr. Needle going to show up? Does Jaden Daniels want that shot? And will Dr. Needle avoid puncturing a lung? Remember, that happened with Tyrod Taylor a few years ago, and it opened the door for Justin Herbert's career as a starter.
So you're saying that's what the depending factor is going to be?
I think that's going to be one of the factors. Is he willing to get shot up, and are they willing to do it? And does the shot work properly to allow him to play without pain? I mean, pain, you know, pain is a useful thing. Pain is our body telling us, stop it.
Well, so, then nobody would ever play football. Yeah. Then you don't have a job. Sure. If these guys listen to their bodies, we don't have the football industrial complex.
Certain sources of pain, like, you know, the muscles involved in throwing a football. We saw the agony he was in on Sunday after he suffered the injury, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see him or not, but that gives the game a different vibe, and they're going to regret that they flexed the game to 4:25 Eastern if it's Marcus Mariota versus Caleb Williams.
I think if people listen to their bodies, they also wouldn't go to work sick, and that's a whole other discussion. Wow. I want to stay in strange places. Our friend Kalen Kaler from ESPN reporting about the really observation tank that is a Dallas Cowboys practice and how people can pay to watch it. Obviously, Jerry Jones in the news last week yelling at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. What were your takeaways from just the report and what you've heard since then?
Well, when the talk first emerged last year after the Cowboys were embarrassed by the Packers in the playoffs that maybe Jerry Jones would fire Mike McCarthy and hire Bill Belichick, Jason Garrett, who works with us at Football Night in America, he said, hey, Bill Belichick is not going to go for here comes a group here, here comes a group there. They open the door and here they are. So if Belichick is ever going to be the coach of the Cowboys, this daily fan tour thing has to go. And when you read the article at ESPN, you can argue that this is one of the reasons why the Cowboys haven't been to an NFC Championship game since 1995. You need a sanctuary. You need a refuge. Every day you've got people in there. It's disrupting and distracting the players from the things that they have to do to try to get ready, because we all need a place where we can retreat away from the noise, away from the crowds, away from everything, and get ourselves mentally right to go do whatever we need to do. So I think it's unfortunate. And it just, it further proves my point that I've been making all year long. Jerry Jones doesn't care about winning Super Bowls. He cares about making people think he wants to win Super Bowls because he cares about making money. He wants his team to be America's team. He wants that stadium to be full of Cowboys fans. He wants people buying overpriced food and gear and other stuff. And he wants everybody talking about the Dallas Cowboys all the time and allowing fans to come in and mingle and be around the players for a fee. That's just part of this effort to maximize fan interest in the team.
I feel like that's most owners, though, right? If we're talking about professional sports, that's most owners.
Well, unless... Jerry's better than most. Jerry's better than most. They all say we want to win a Super Bowl because they have to. They all want to make as much money as possible. I mean, they're all winning. All the NFL owners are winning every year. They just have to act disappointed if they don't win a Super Bowl. But if you measure success by winning a Super Bowl, you're going to be pissed off all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said that about Jones before. He's 82 years old. He's got a $250 million boat. He's got more money than he could spend if he lived a million years. And he's tormented because his team can't win a Super Bowl. That's what we're supposed to believe? I choose not to believe that.
I want to just real quick touch on your thoughts on Mike Tomlin, because he went quote unquote Lone Ranger and just did the thing that people in his building were telling him not to do with going with Russell Wilson over Justin Fields. What are your thoughts on that dynamic? And Russell Wilson, do you think he's going to be the guy for the rest of the season based on what we saw Sunday night?
The easiest way to understand why Tomlin did what he did is this. He sees a ceiling from Russell Wilson that potentially results in a Super Bowl win for the Steelers. He doesn't see that from Justin Fields. So even though Fields was 4-2, you have the tough conversation. But at the end of the day, what are we trying to do? We hear it all the time. It's the best interest of the team. Everything that happens is in the best interest of the team. Well, if the team is truly trying to win a Super Bowl and not just simply fill the stadium and make as much money as possible, if you're truly trying to win the Super Bowl in Pittsburgh, you go from Fields to Wilson to let Wilson become the guy who won a Super Bowl and went to another one with the Seahawks. And I've been making that same case, and I got into a somewhat heated argument with my good friend Paul Allen earlier today. I think the Vikings should go trade for Matthew Stafford under the same reasoning. Sam Darnold, he'll take them to a certain level. If Stafford's available, he's the guy that makes the Vikings a Super Bowl contender. And if the Vikings are serious about trying to finally win a Super Bowl, they'll consider seriously trying to get Matthew Stafford, because he would be better in that offense than Sam Darnold is. So that's what it's all about. That's the litmus test. The Steelers are serious about trying to win a Super Bowl. That's why Russell Wilson's a quarterback.
But you're really trying to move Matthew Stafford today.
I'm trying to manifest the...
So basically, you think he would...
Go ahead. Sorry. You think
he would have made that third down pass is really what this is about.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think he would.
It's fair.
Third and four, he'd make that play.
He
knows he won a Super Bowl with Kevin O'Connell, Wes Phillips, and Chris O'Hara, three members of the Vikings coaching staff. He won a Super Bowl with them in 2021. It's a no-brainer to me if the Vikings are serious about trying to win a Super Bowl.
That's
Sam Darnold was
going to
get the tap on the shoulder at some point this year anyway for J.J. McCarthy. I'd rather get the tap on the shoulder for Matthew Stafford than J.J. McCarthy.
I had to give our guy Aaron Rodgers a hug. It's not a Mike Florio hit until we can have some fun at the expense of Aaron Rodgers.
Here we go.
And I had to give him grudging credit yesterday, because I think he reached the apotheosis of his own obtuseness when he said, we have to have accountability. And one of the things we have to stop listening to the media, stop listening to you guys. That's how we got to stay together. So it's like, well, which is it? Do you want accountability, or are you blaming the media? Leave it to Aaron Rodgers to not even hear what he himself was saying about that and the inherent irony.
Well, he's got to blame somebody for everything that can happen. Look, I think he's kept his mouth shut for 2 weeks about his views on the firing of Robert Saleh because he's crammed in his back pocket the built-in excuse if they don't make it to the playoffs. Hey, what do you expect? The owner fired the coach 5 weeks in. We can't overcome that. That's the reason why I didn't get to the playoffs. So he's very smart. He's very calculating. He looks for factors that distinguish him from quarterbacks who have won more Super Bowls, like his ultra-impressive touchdown-interception ratio. So, yeah, none of that surprises me. The only thing that surprised me this week, he managed to make himself seem like a real boy, like a human being, relatable and flawed, when he had some fun with the video that has clear and obvious evidence of him picking his nose and eating it.
Which is just, that's another, yeah, no. No,
I
no.
rest my case.
It's a non-starter.
Mike Florio, pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. On that note.
Yes, perfect.
I'm going to go eat lunch on that note.
Yes, lovely. Okay, awesome.
No mucus in that lunch, I would hope.
Why'd you got to go there?
That's Mike Florio.
Boogers.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dan Bernstein. Eventually, they stop growing. Marshall Harris.
I stopped growing physically, but not mentally, I hope.
That's a lovely sentiment.
Yeah.
Of course, we're all trying.
I'm just here to grow with you guys. Grow.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
At our place, we're really trying to grow the man.
Middays 10 till 2.
Darnold. Look out. Safety. Byron Young. Takes him down to the end zone. Seal it. What? Add two, and it's 30-20.
Now, I thought the face mask, something happened to Darnold. Maybe he grabbed underneath and got the jersey, but something made Darnold, his head go back with his pressure. Remember we said the left side is where this pressure is going to come from. Fisk takes the tackle. Young works through, and he got a hold of something there. Let's see. Yeah, he got that face mask. He sure did.
I mean, come on. Come on. There's no guarantee they come back and win, obviously. They would need the touchdown and the two and all that. But that sucked. And I don't have to put myself in the shoes of one fandom or another. Get it right. You're all out there. You got one damn job. And I understand if it's in the middle of a scrum and things are in there. There's snow. It's right there. It's right in front of you.
So I think we all love the NFL replay assist because it is quick, seamless. It just happens. This year, it was expanded to include intentional grounding, roughing the passer, and hit out of bounds penalties. And guess what? In 2025, it will include face masks.
Probably.
And it might include fighting, too, after what we saw on the sidelines earlier this season as well.
You would like
an obvious ejection. You threw a punch.
And it was missed completely. Yeah,
it completely missed. And it couldn't be reviewed because the whistle wasn't blown dead.
Right. Right, right.
There's no penalty.
It really is bothersome to know that you have somebody there and you do have... I love the way when they have properly used assist, where it's not a full review,
it's just like, no,
incomplete.
It does not hold up the game. And what's crazy is, watching the replays of that, you heard Kirk Herbstreit on the television broadcast describe it, but to watch the angles of the officials who clearly could have seen it, I'm like, they must have been watching something else because it's right there. When your head gets violently jerked like that, it's 99 out of 100 times a face mask.
And sometimes somebody gets somebody with a big, strong, dry hand or wearing those gloves can grab the actual helmet surface, which is legal, and pull it. But you've got to close your head. And contact with the face mask is not a face mask.
No, it's got to be grabbed.
It has to be intent.
Grabbed, pulled.
It has to be an action. It can't just be incidental. So,
but watching that over and over again.
Come on. And we're trying to adjudicate hip drops in real time? Like, you saw Roquan Smith just got fined $17,000 for the hip drop that turned Chris Godwin's ankle the wrong way. But how are you expecting to flag that when you can't get as egregious a face mask call? It's too bad. It's too bad.
I want things to be different and better, but at the same time, I understand this city is very happy with the outcome of that game.
Well, if you win now, The Bears are threatening to move out of last place because it's, I mean, right now they're the last place Bears.
I think they would still be the last place Bears because they're 5-2, right? So they would be 5-2.
Right, because they haven't played yet, so they don't have and the tiebreakers.
Bears haven't played a division game yet, so the next tiebreaker is common opponents.
And have they had common
opponents? Although they've had a common opponent, and the Bears won that game.
Bears beat the Rams.
Bears beat the
Rams. There you go. The Bears will leapfrog the Vikings if they win.
So my question that I was asking myself, and now I'll open up to everyone, was this more about the Vikings coming back down to earth, or was this about, hey, by the way, those two receivers that were missing in the Bears game, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, they're decent. And when I say decent, I'm being sarcastic. They're way better than decent.
Yeah, so that's one where maybe you did get a gift.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't have to apologize for it. It's okay.
Gift horse, mouth. I'm not looking directly
into okay.
it.
It's okay. So the Bears find themselves now, and maybe the bloom is off the Vikings thing a little bit. A lot of people thought that Darnold eventually was going to regress.
Come back to earth.
It was just because he's probably not as good a player as he'd been showing, but they are well coached. Did you think that in the battle between McVay and Flores with some of those exotic packages he had in, what did you take away from that?
I think the overall thing that I took away was, hey, you've got to be really good every week and you've got to be consistent in the way you attack things. And McVay is McVay. If he has actual Pro Bowl level, all pro level receivers, with that quarterback, they're going to find ways to move the ball. I was surprised at the mistakes that were made. I don't know if you saw the interception, the one that sailed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, well, if you make mistakes like that, the Vikings are definitely going to win this game. But then the defense was good enough, or maybe Sam Darnold was bad enough. I was trying to figure out, is this about the Rams defense, or is this about...
I didn't know. Early, I thought it was a shootout.
Right. Like, well, it was a 14-14.
Right. And right away, like, oh, boy. And then
it slowed down.
They started to figure some things out defensively.
There were definitely adjustments made by both teams. And I'm telling you, when that interception was thrown by Stafford, I said, okay, I think the Vikings are probably going to take care of this. But I was wrong.
309 asks, if just scraping a face mask isn't a penalty, why do they penalize hands to the face? Well, in line play, that's illegal. You are not allowed to block someone by shoving their face. That's a different call. It's not tackling somebody by the face mask or twisting the face mask. If you get up under into the chin, you're literally not allowed to do that.
Yeah, and that's different if you have the ball and you're a ball carrier and you stiff arm someone. You can do that because you're not grabbing. You're just pushing out.
A stiff arm to the face is not illegal hands to the face.
Right.
You're not blocking.
It's a different thing altogether.
Right.
There's different categories for all these plays that we're talking about that are made within a play.
Right. Illegal hands to the face is almost always in line. It's almost always lineman on lineman or a blocker on tackler contact one way or the other. But out in space, it's not necessarily illegal. If I want to smack you right in the face while I'm running with the football, I can do that.
Another good point brought up by 312, with the NFL and all major sports leagues going all in with legalized gambling as advertising partners, the leagues must is in all caps, by the way, do everything in their power to get these right to remove any chance of officials throwing calls. Replay needs to happen for calls like this. I'm telling you, it will be changed in 2025.
I agree with that. You can't. There's no romance of human error, and even in baseball, when they start talking about,
we're getting close to the robot umps.
Good, and in because there have been some well received tests.
I like the minor league challenge. The challenge is so quick. It's not. It's on akin to the tennis, and I always say, for me as a fan, tennis opened my eyes to what was possible and how quickly we can get this figured out.
Soccer, AVR, with advanced video review.
Yeah, for the offside calls, all of it. Now that we know, it's like when people look at AI as this thing that's going to, if used correctly, it can just assist, expedite, and help human beings.
And it doesn't Nothing is going to be taken away from the experience, and it'll probably end up being enhanced. I've always been bothered by the, well, it's always been human beings and human error is part of it. But you can't, and especially now, and this is really too bad that what we're seeing with the reactions from angry gamblers, the personal social media attacks on individuals, and it's apparently in tennis, it's been awful.
Yeah, I believe
it's been awful from tennis players just being having their social media just get spammed from people for losing or
gamblers.
For not winning by enough.
And tennis had some scandals too.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah,
some big scandals.
But it is more important than ever that bad officiating isn't the reason why people are winning or losing money.
Another note. I don't know if you saw Christian Darrisaw. Left tackle for the Vikings on crutches. I don't think we have an update on
him. Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah, no, he was on crutches last night, and they were like...
High ankle, maybe?
Maybe so. I'm not sure, but that's a big blow if the Vikings don't have him for a period of time.
Well, and the Bears are going to have theirs, too.
They have theirs right now. We're waiting to hear and see what happens with a couple of guys in the secondary.
I am doubting that either Brisker or Gordon play.
Yeah, Gordon... I think an excellent point was brought up on Mullion Hall earlier today. It's been so long since this man even practiced. I mean, we're going on 3 weeks now since we've seen him. Obviously, he didn't practice after the game in which he got a concussion, but he hasn't done anything since. And he's going to need some build-up time. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can say on a Friday, oh, he's been cleared from the concussion, hasn't practiced.
It's football. They do stuff like that all the time. How's your brain? How's your brain? Bad. How's it bad? How's it today? Fine. Okay, go play football.
It's been a minute.
They do that, though.
Several minutes.
They do that, though.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And the Guardians are down to their last strike here. Here's the 1-2. Thomas, fly ball right field. Who else should end this game than that man right there? Juan Soto puts it away, and the New York Yankees have won the American League pennant. Juan Soto's three-run home run in the 10th, the stuff of legends.
This crowd, though, ready to explode, on the verge of making it all happen. There's a bouncing ball to second. Taylor's got it. Los Angeles is alive, and they're headed to the World Series.
Man, I would do anything to have a different lead announcing team for the World Series. Because Brian Anderson is so great.
He's stellar. And that's whether it's NBA or
MLB.
Oh,
my God. It just is the voice control, the way he feels every moment and understands the storylines. He's just, and you know, God, and then hearing Adam Amin do football, he was phenomenal. Yes, there's so many great broadcasts, so many.
It's really like anything else. We got so many great ones because so many more people are doing it, and the natural evolution, if you have enough talented people, because of all these streaming things that exist, more people are getting an opportunity to broadcast.
And look, anybody can be a broadcaster now. I always say that when I talk to kids, and I used to say, well, you got to send out your tapes and start in the small market. And no, you can right now get on YouTube and start broadcasting. Anybody can. You can listen to your own work. You can do. You want to broadcast? Broadcast.
All you need is a phone or a device to record, and someone that is willing to say, "Hey, I'll look at your stuff."
Sure.
If you have those two things, you're good.
And technically, it's not obviously what we're doing right now is broadcasting. Technically,
of course,
we're still over the airwaves, but it's. I mean, it's various forms of
It's not just. It's not just over the air though. That's the point.
Right.
Streaming is a thing. Podcasts are a thing. There's so many different ways to get a megaphone now.
Or just work on your craft.
Or to work on your craft.
That's the most important thing, is just put it out there. So I don't like the way my voice sounds. Okay, well, keep talking until you like the way your voice sounds.
Practice, practice, practice.
Emulate the best, and you pare away the stuff you don't like, and then you're left with something that's pretty good.
And your own.
Right.
So I love it.
I always say, figure it out, and they say, well,
These broadcasting tips brought to you by... No, I'm
there you go. And by the way, people are asking me when I was saying about Beer Church Brewing, yes, New Buffalo, Michigan. Yes, it is. Destination. Absolute destination. A pizza amusement park. It's so much fun. But people are asking, are you talking about the place in New Buffalo? Like, it's some secret out there? Like, how do you know about it? Like, trust me, people know about it. Because it's fantastic.
Before we go in on baseball, can I just respond to something?
Of course.
See, I like interacting with these people.
Yeah, don't let them.
I like it though. Yeah. I like it though. People are telling me this is 847. You can't include the first year that was designed to lose, and we all know the reason why they didn't score in the fourth quarter and have any comebacks was because of Justin Fields. He's no longer here. Your argument doesn't hold water. My argument that Matt Eberflus needs to prove that he can coach a team that can win on the road. All right, guys. I hear you. I just want to make sure you hear yourself. You got to show me. I'm not from Missouri, but you got to show me. He has not shown me. And if you have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter and you're blaming it on your quarterback why you lost, there are coaching decisions that are made there that affect the outcome of those games. You have been winning the game, and now you're no longer winning, and you don't have the ability to come back and win games. Those are two things hand in hand. Bad fourth quarters. And that was last year where they were not trying to tank. They were trying to win games. They were in the playoff race until, what, a month left?
So
anyway,
No, it's okay. Don't apologize.
Sorry to you.
No. So Jazz Chisholm said, pay Juan Soto, pay my guy.
The number he came with, though, can we talk about that?
$700 million?
Is that too rich for your blood?
No.
I mean, it is, because I don't think you have $700 million to give out.
How do you know?
Well, that's fair.
Stay out of my pocket.
I'm going to stay out of your pockets. What about the Cubs' pockets?
Sure. Why shouldn't the Cubs say, pick up the phone? Why wouldn't you want Juan Soto?
For $700 million?
Sure.
I think age is the biggest factor
it's
here.
26.
Yeah. So normally we're talking about a guy like this. They're 28, 29, 30. And no, you don't want to pay for the next 10 years. You don't want to get involved in an Albert Pujols situation, right? Or even an A-Rod the second time around situation. I think the Yankees are going to pay him enough to stay in New York. That is my belief. Now, if they don't, the number of teams who can pay him what he actually wants, very, very limited. Are the Cubs in that group of teams? That is the question.
I'm sure they're probably not.
All that?
But the point is they should be. They should absolutely be talking to them.
Absolutely.
I just can't get over the idea of, for those of us of a certain age, baseball fans of a certain age, you know, I'm like right there. I think Spiegel and I are like a year apart in age and very similar, you know, raised similarly as with baseball being super important. That the 77 World Series, the 78 World Series, and then to have it again in the strike-shortened year of 81, Yankees, Dodgers, when your baseball cards, your favorite baseball cards, were all out there for in the biggest moments, doing things that mattered. And I have so many foundational baseball memories based on October and Yankees Dodgers, or Dodgers Yankees, however you want to say it. The level of talent involved right now, the fact that you have on the same field Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge. Like, think that. What more as a baseball fan? Like, this is everything you've been asking for.
And Stanton has come to life in this postseason, man. Like, it was kind of not such a great season for him. He's come to life, man. He's been exciting.
Yeah, start looking at his career numbers and with whom he's stacking up, and you see that his The Hall of Fame case can certainly be bolstered by postseason performance. God, he's strong. And when you see him off balance, even half fooled, but enough weight still back, his arms, man, like those, we're all ruined by the steroid era and what we would see and what we would see, giant Popeye looking dudes, you know, flicking away their bats like toothpicks. But in modern baseball, to see a guy who has actually aged like a real person and who he can't even really move, but good luck throwing him a strike when he's hot. Good luck.
I think it's interesting, Stanton's case, both as an all-timer in baseball, but also as a Yankee. He can really cement his Yankee legacy here if the Yankees find a way to beat the Dodgers. It's legacies are in the balance for both sides here. When you're talking about Dodgers, some of those players have won before.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers, they're a dynasty.
Yeah,
they're
they're
dynasty.
In the mix. They've got World Series titles. Like, for Shohei, it's, you know, I'm here. This is where I was trying to get to. If you ever saw his little notebook of all his little personal goals and how he's just been checking things off.
Is it like Layla's notebook?
It's a little bit more scary in the fact that this...
Nothing is scarier than Layla's notebook.
No, he wrote this stuff when he was a teenager and he's won all the stuff. He's done all the things he said he was going to do except World Series.
I don't know if it's full of receipts that can ruin lives, though.
That's fair. But for Stanton specifically, he's a guy who at the age of 34, this was his age 34 season, probably has a couple of more years left, but I don't know how much. It could fall off next year. It could. But he's got 429 home runs. He gets to 500. That's one of those magic numbers, right? And so I love looking at Stanton, Soto, Judge, and the problems that presents for any given pitcher on any given day. Are they still going to go with this whole pitching by, you know, bullpen in some of these games? I'm fascinated to see how the World Series itself plays out.
Can I give you...
Go ahead.
Juan Soto's most similar batters through age 25.
Well, but he's through age 34 now. But
no, Juan Soto.
Oh, Juan Soto. Sorry, because he's only 26.
Juan Soto, these are his most available, most similar batters through his age. Okay? From 10 to 1. Vlad Guerrero Jr., Orlando Cepeda, Mickey Mantle, Miguel Cabrera, Eddie Matthews, Andrew Jones, Mike Trout, Ken Griffey Jr., Frank Robinson, and Bryce Harper.
Only one of those players is not in the Hall of Fame that's already retired. And he should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. That's Andrew Jones.
And I think will be.
You think so?
He has to be. He's too damn good. Yes. Harold Baines is in the Hall of Fame. When in doubt, just say that to yourself.
But how did Harold Baines get there? I guess, okay. I got you.
Harold Baines is in the Hall of Fame.
I know. Okay. I'm a White Sox fan. I know.
Yeah, I know you know.
Chicago! Are you ready?
Quit yelling.
The Bergstein and Harris Show. Middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I mean, is that really a question?
Yes. There you go.
That's going to be the brightest
Motown
spot of this Philly segment.
Back again.
Because the rest is darkness.
Doing a little East Coast swing.
Yeah, that's my, the East Coast family, baby.
You know, back
Boys
in school.
Boys to Men, another bad creation. Bell Biv DeVoe. I forgot about
Boys
Bell Biv
DeVoe. Boys to Men, ABC, BBD.
The East Coast family.
Yes.
Back in school, we used to dream about this every day.
It can really ever happen. Or the dreams just fade away.
Then we started singing and they said it sounded smooth. Then we started a group and here we are.
Kicking it just for you.
Yes, all of that.
Yep.
All of that.
I'm not apologizing.
Who would want you
no
to?
No one asked
this
you
is
to.
The most fun part of the segment. Everything else is sadness.
No, we're talking about baseball, which is very exciting.
A texter gave us the perfect setup for this. This was on Breakfast Ball on FS1. And somebody asked, who likes baseball less, Rob Manfred or Danny Parkins?
That's not nice.
No, but it's not wrong though.
Gotta talk really to you about like the socks.
Go back talking football. I know you're the commissioner of baseball, but
says it's your, a piece of metal.
Who's on your fantasy team? So.
Fight Club. R.I.P. Louis Anderson. So wait.
And for the record, I do like his show. Like, I watch it at midnight, but I watch it. It's not so much
at
breakfast.
At midnight?
That's when the re-air is. I don't know. I enjoy it.
You know where I am.
Isn't the news cycle, like, long gone by then?
You know what time I go
care.
To bed?
Well, here it is. This is Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, being queried.
Commissioner of baseball.
Commissioner of baseball. Sounds like football.
Being queried by Danny Parkins on FS1.
So, Commissioner, I'm from Chicago. I'm a Chicagoan. There's reports that the White Sox might be going up for sale. There's talk of public funding and debates on the stadium. And next year will be the 125th season of the White Sox on the South Side. I'm wondering what assurances you can give to White Sox fans that no matter what happens with a stadium or a sale, that the White Sox will be in Chicago.
Look, Chicago is an anchor city for us. I think that the White Sox are in a difficult situation. I think the location of the stadium's tough, but I have confidence that things are going to work out in Chicago, and we're going to continue to have two teams in Chicago.
So there's no assurances there other than his own personal confidence. I disagree. Why is the location of the stadium tough?
Has he been?
Like, yeah, I'm sure he's been.
Really easy to get there.
I think the location of the stadium's fine.
I think he was talking about in relation to other things around said ballpark.
It's fine by me.
No, you, yes, but not to the owner who wants more stuff.
Well, right, the location isn't okay for the owner who wants me to pay for his real estate
more stuff
venture.
Yes, no. That's how that goes.
I sarcastically asked the question about Manfred, but I do think that he has been on his page, he has been on the same page as Jerry Reinsdorf when it comes to supporting that effort. Like that was established right when this news broke, I think.
Well, sure, they would love to have public money build a new stadium for them. Of course they would.
I think all MLB owners are united on that front.
But they also said that they were going to put up earnest money or some sort of money to help out with the project too. Like that was part of the discussion.
Yeah, and they'll see a return on that investment because once everything's built, they'll just be printing money.
It's a great idea. Just put up all of it and then we got a deal.
Agreed.
That's all. Just keep going.
Is that all?
Keep going. Just put in more and then you'll be good. Tony La Russa was on with Pat Tomasulo on WGN Morning News. And Pat asked him about these reports that the White Sox are now for sale.
Well, I think because, the conversation was with Dave Stewart, one of the great pitchers with the Oakland A's. And he's trying to be part of an organization that probably acquires an expansion club, maybe in Nashville. So I think they were just talking baseball and the speculation. Jerry's White Sox guy, and he's going to see us get better.
Okay, that's wrong. Because they are talking to people about selling the team. Dave Stewart is part of one ownership group that is exploring the possibility of buying the White Sox. So that has nothing to do with talking about an expansion team.
I don't know if it was an intentional conflating those two ideas, expansion versus buying an existing team, or if he thought that for some reason Dave Stewart was just kind of like, oh, let's talk about baseball. You own a team. No. I want to own a team.
No, that's not what it was at all. And Jerry knows Jerry and Dave Stewart are best friends.
Right.
They worked together forever. They helped run the Diamondbacks into the ground together.
And that's the confusing part of this for me is at what point is it more than just Dave Stewart?
Well, if there are other offers out there, the moment they say we're listening, there's going to be a ton of phone calls.
Lots of tires being kicked.
Yes. And Tony said also, it's not Jerry's fault that the White Sox suck.
He really has gotten beat up, gotten a major blame. And the fact is you hire people in the front office, major league manager, players to play the game, and he's at their mercy. I think he's one of the finest owners. He's done more for baseball, minor leagues, executives, and players with the way he's been fair. Everybody loves working for him. Not Jerry's fault that we played like crap. And we're all bound and determined to improve it. In fact, I think you're going to see a major improvement next year.
Oh, blow it out your ass, you old coot.
Well, the phrase was correct.
But it's your fault.
Yeah, the phrase was correct, but the accountability was in the wrong direction. He's like, he's at the mercy. No. They're at your mercy because you're the one who hired them.
Yeah, you're the top baseball voice. You're the guy sitting next to him telling him what to do on the baseball side, writing little note cards and passing notes to him all the time. That's you.
Don't blame them, according to them.
That's you. If it's not Jerry's fault for listening to you, then it is his fault. He hired you.
Also, a good look to throw Chris Getz under the bus like that after a year?
Jerry's the person.
I don't like our team.
All these stupid baseball people that I helped hire. Oh, wait a second. I am one of those stupid baseball people.
Oh, cool. Did you interview anybody else?
No.
Oh.
Walks into wall, falls down.
Huh?
Aid to black. What are we doing? That's so stupid. Hey, okay, well, that was White Sox talk.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
Sexy football with Matt Bowen.
I was listening to you guys on the radio one afternoon.
You should be. Everybody should.
Do you guys think with Lonzo back and your emergence and Zach healthy that the three-point shot can be a consistent point of emphasis for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, not just only us three, but Io, Pat, you know, Giddy shooting with confidence, you know, Stick shot 43 last year, Vooch can shoot the hell out of the ball. Like, so we got a lot of guys who can really, Julian, obviously, we got a lot of guys who can shoot the ball. So I think as long as we put it all together, continue to, you know, move the ball and play for each other. And, get, you know, we got a lot of guys who can shoot. We also got a lot of guys who can get downhill also and create plays. So as long as we continue to play off each other and continue to do the right things offensively, I think the sky's the limit.
That's Coby White. I don't know about the sky being the limit.
I knew you were going to disagree with that particular part of the quote.
I don't. I think maybe 500 is the limit, and 500 is going to be too many wins.
500 is going to be way too many 500
is way too many wins for this year because that's going to get you further away from a championship. This year's going to be weird.
I don't think they can even wait till the trade deadline to make moves. I could be wrong, right? They may be as bad as you think they are. But I think we're not taking into account how bad some of these other teams are going to be.
I don't know that there are enough teams to be bad for them to protect their pick. Like, when you consider who was bad and why last year. I will say I had some fun with advanced stats, and the NBA actually keeps preseason advanced stats.
Oh,
yes, we are. Building off of what we talked to Bill Weddington about. When you realize the pace of play has changed, here's how much so far. They are leading the league in pace of play in the preseason.
Yeah.
At 110.30.
Yeah, that's what Bill...
Cleveland is next at 108.30. And then it's Minnesota, Atlanta, Indiana, Memphis, the Knicks, who we saw last night. That was interesting. Nuggets, Heats, and Rockets.
They're going to have a puncher's chance in a lot of games just because they're going to be chucking. They're going to have a puncher's chance. They're going to lose a lot of those games because they can't guard anyone.
They've still got to get set, though, too. Like, that's the thing. You still have to, like, set up some sort of
I just want to
half
point out.
Court once you're running. It can't. Zach LaVine, for example, is a catch-and-shoot three guy. Where is he going to set up to catch it, you know?
Anywhere?
The corner? The moment he
arrives in the building, he thinks he's open.
I think he can do that. And he's going to... We've seen it in the preseason.
You can run all you want, but you can't turn it over and you need somebody to get set to try to shoot the ball.
We saw it in the preseason. He's just out here firing. I think more of the same. And he looks really healthy, and that's a problem. One, not a problem for him. I'm glad he's healthy, but I'm saying a problem for the Bulls' proposition of losing all these games. Here's what I want to point out.
Not a problem.
Actually, he always loses. He's just not associated with winning.
We'll listen to the sound you want to play first, and then I'll point out what
I want to point out. Okay, all right. Well, let's listen to Billy Donovan. I just thought this was interesting with Mully and Haw. When asked if the Bulls have a target number of three-point attempts per game.
I think what's happening right now is the league's playing faster, right? And there's always a sweet spot, right? Like, you don't want to play at such a breakneck pace that you're turning the ball over, you're taking ill-advised shots, you can't get back in transition defense, and you're putting yourself in harm's way, right? But for us and our team, you know, we're not going to be the biggest, the strongest, the most physical. But what we've got to be is we've got to be in elite shape, and we've got to be able to run. Now, if you look at all the analytics, the best quality shots the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. From the first 7 seconds of the shot clock, the shooting percentages in the NBA go down. And then the last, you know, 7 seconds of the clock, that's the lowest percentage shot across the board, right? So everybody's trying to run. I think the sustainability part is we've got to be able to sustain that pace. That doesn't mean that we need to shoot quick, right? But it means we need to generate good shots. So I think if you look at the game, the most valued shots in the game are layups, anything at the rim, and the corner three, besides the free throw line, right? I'm saying besides the corner three and the rim. You've got to get to those spots. So, yes, we've taken, you know, the second most threes in the league, but I think you got to look a little bit deeper. We're also second in the league in generating in this preseason corner threes, and we were top five in the league getting to the rim. So when you start to look at your shot profile, what you want to look at is, are you generating shots in those best areas of the floor, which is at the rim and in the corners? To your point, if you're coming down and the majority of threes are going to be above the break threes, that's just the way it is. But you can, through penetration, getting to the rim, playing fast, playing downhill, attacking the paint, generate spray outs and kick outs that are going to be good shots. There's no question that most of your threes, if they can come off inside to out, dribble penetration, transition, those are your highest quality threes. So there's definitely a learning curve for our team of the kind of threes that we want to take. But I've been pretty pleased. I think our guys have done a good job with their shot selection and have moved the ball very well. And I think that's how we're going to have to play, you know, for us to, you know, try to generate a shot profile that's going to give us a chance. Because that was one of the things we were up against. You know, we weren't a team that took a lot of threes. We had a lot of guys that were elite in the mid-range. You know, DeMar is, you know, a Hall of Fame player, and that's where he's elite. But what you end up doing is you're battling the analytics battle, right? Where all of a sudden you sit there and say, well, some team's taking 50 threes and you're taking 25 threes. It's hard to overcome that. Well, the way you overcome it is by getting to the free throw line, by offensive rebounding and, you know, generating fouls. So, you know, there's formulas that you have to look at. But I think as long as our shot quality is good and we're getting to the paint and generating corner threes, I've felt pretty good about the profile of this group so far.
All right. Well, buckle up. And the person I'm worried about, and
who are you worried about?
I say this tongue in cheek, our guy Stacy.
Oh yeah, this might offend his basketball sensibilities.
Exactly.
The defensive part especially.
But it's not just the defensive part, it's, you know, he's still holding on to the feed the big man, reward the big man, run it through the big man.
Well, Vooch never
yeah, that's
got,
because
Vooch
it's
never
Vooch.
Got enough touches, period.
He's one of your best players. Like, I still think that needs to happen.
Yeah, I understand it. But
like, pretend like you're not protecting a pick. But you still want that to happen.
Yes, but we've all seen it where Stacy gets crazy when somebody passes up a layup for a three. But that's the game now.
He gets offended offended when somebody passes up a layup for a bad three, I think.
So,
like, not necessarily a good three, but here's the other problem with this, because I'm still looking at preseason advanced stats. The offensive rating needs to be correlated closely to your pace. And for the Bulls, that's not the case. For the Bulls, it's, you know, they're 12th in the league in that, even though they're first in pace of play. Like, that's, I want those, if I'm Daryl Morey, trust the process. I want those numbers closer.
A couple of notes real quick. Adam Schefter says Jaden Daniels is not practicing today.
Oh, man.
Due to his rib injury. And also, I just saw a tweet from Casey Johnson that while Dejounte Murray is at shoot-around, Zion Williamson is not.
What?
That's why I asked, because I was curious. Maybe Zion doesn't play, and maybe your chances of winning have gone exponentially up. They already don't have Trey Murphy yet this season. There's things there. So here's the question I ask. Who do you think led the preseason in three-point attempts per contest? I'll give you a hint. They're also leading the regular season in three-point attempts per contest.
Oh, Celtics, yeah.
Yes. They averaged 52.6. Who do you think was second?
Mm.
Bulls. Bulls but with a bullet. So they're number two in preseason threes per attempt. Now, last year, they had the fifth lowest threes attempted per game. And they weren't that good either. But they're middle of the pack in the preseason. They ranked 13th in the league. And what that led to was them being fourth in the preseason in three-pointers made per contest. If they can do that, they can be in any game. Well, most games, because they're going to have really bad shooting nights. That just happens.
Right. It's the defensive part of it that's key here.
So you guys were talking about, you know, how other teams are bad, but not as bad as the Bulls, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to remind you, because I think we all need a reminder of where the Bulls finished last year. Do you remember what place they finished the regular season in the Eastern Conference, the Bulls?
They were 10th.
They were 9th. Just ahead of the Atlanta Hawks. Are they decidedly worse than the Atlanta Hawks?
Not yet. I think they will be.
I'm going to name some other teams. Brooklyn Nets?
No, they're not worse than the Nets.
No, yeah, the Nets are
Raptors?
Yeah, probably.
Hornets?
Nah.
Wizards?
No.
And then Pistons, which I think will be better than the Bulls.
The Pistons had too much talent for that losing streak.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really bothered me.
It depends on the difference yet another coaching change
My makes. Point being, there's six teams that finished behind them last year, and I could see five more teams or more finishing behind them this year unless they dismantle this thing quickly. If they get off to a 500-ish start, like say through a month, there's going to be reason to worry about that top 10 protected pick.
Well, then you're going to have to start just resting people. Then you just have to say, look, you have tonight off.
Everyone's on the Lonzo plan?
Yeah.
Are players going to be okay with that, though? Players don't want to tank.
You think Vooch is going to be okay with that?
The reason that the Sixers were so good at tanking is because they got people on the roster that no matter how well they played.
Not good.
who was the tank commander for them? Was it McCollum at the time?
When you say tank commander, you
like
mean,
who was like chief of the tank? Like who was head of the tank?
Tony Roten Jr.
He's a guy. Tony Roten.
Yeah, he was a spokesperson for the tank.
So what year was this on the Sixers?
I was trying to think 14, like the, definitely. That's when Marshall and I worked
the
together.
The deepest depth.
Like how
of the tank.
How low? Maybe, I think it was 2015-16 is when they won 10 games.
When
I
did
believe.
The league step in and shut it down?
Oh, when they fired
Sam Hinkie? Yeah, that's when they shut it down.
At the 2015 Sixers were 10-72.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
And their leading my man, Ish Smith. Let's go.
Ish Smith.
Oh, Ish Smith.
Ish Smith, Jahlil Okafor.
Wait.
Yep.
Nerlens Noel.
Yep.
Robert Nerlens. Covington.
Yeah.
Hollis Thompson, Jeremy Grant, Isaiah Cannon, Nick Stauskas, TJ McConnell.
McConnell, thank you. I said McCollum, my bad.
That's why I was confused. I was like,
yeah, sorry.
There's Tony Roten.
Switching sports brains.
Oh, God. Elton Brand was still playing.
Yeah.
Good Lord,
we
man.
We had serious discussions about Nerlens.
That team is built to do what, Dan? Explicitly. What is that team built to do explicitly?
Get you closer to winning a championship.
Exactly. By losing all the games.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of assets acquired. Don't you remember when you and I were really disappointed in Nerlens' numbers? It was you, me, and Amy Fadul because he went to Kentucky. Like, we were like, he should have been a 20-10 guy.
Yeah,
he wasn't.
They had
like
high draft picks who were
something.
Also awful, but even if they had been good, it couldn't have made that much of a difference. So my point is, the Bulls have a legit all-star on their team in Zach LaVine and a former all-star in Nikola Vucevic. I guess they're both technically former all-stars. They have guys who on any given night can put up big numbers, and they have other guys also who can play the role. They can win games, Dan, against these bad teams we're talking about and comparing them to. That is going to be problematic a month from now, because last time I checked, Billy Donovan can still coach.
True.
They're going to need to start trading these pieces away.
Soon.
As soon as the phone rings, start moving them. And then when you have Adama Sanogo out there and EJ Liddell and Talen Horton-Tucker.
And Modest.
Talen's the key to success.
Your guy. Like, you talk about a cornerstone of a tank.
I believe in him.
Talen Horton-Tucker is your man to do that. We have High Noon coming up next. I have a scientific endeavor where I suggest to these researchers, stop. Please don't do this.
I have a story about something that's very dear to my heart. As a quality hugger, this story disgusts me.
I'm going to respect the legend because he was a generational talent.
Next.
Matt Bowen.
Two throws. This one aired out for Galloway. And with contact, it's picked off. Intercepted by Matt Bowen.
NFL writer and analyst for ESPN.
The ball came out. Right now they're calling fumble. Matt Bowen knocked it out.
Seven-year NFL veteran.
Fight me, Bowen.
Defensive back coach for IC Catholic Football.
One of the greatest things and most rewarding things about being a high school coach is to see the impact it can have on your student athletes.
Matt Bowen on 670 The Score.
Let Matt Bowen talk. Shut up.
We always enjoy our conversations with football expert Matt Bowen. We are working to get his line hooked up so we can talk to him about the Chicago Bears and the Washington Commanders.
I'm ready for all the talk. I know Matt's going to have that. See, here's the thing. When Matt comes on, I have to change my entire method of listening because it's going to be so gruff and so direct. I have to just make sure I'm up to speed on the way he's going to be addressing us.
Before Chicago takes on Washington, tune in Sunday from 12 to 3 p.m. for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. They will get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, Mully, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show, presented by Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. Matt Bowen is on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. What's happening, sir? How are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
I'm great. And the Bears offense looks like it's finding an identity, finding things it can do. Why should we think headed into this game now on the road that they found something that is sustainable?
I think it's just the consistency, one, with their getting out of the quarterback position. I think Caleb Williams, we all know, has been excellent the last 2 weeks. And we understand the level of competition there. It doesn't matter. It's an NFL football game. But for me, it's his ability to see it fast. What I mean by that, if you go back to the Jacksonville game, he was hammering the football to the middle of the field, getting out on time, throwing with velocity. I use the term high RPM thrower because that's what I think he is in short to intermediate concepts. And they're also better down the field right now. That was a big issue to start the season, not completing throws down the field. They're doing much better at that. And also, Dan, like we talked about, getting the run game going, more efficiency in the run game, using DeAndre Swift more as a pass-catching target out of the backfield, and getting that screen game going as well.
What's your biggest concern, Matt, as you look at this matchup for the Bears? What do you see with this Commanders team that says that could be a problem?
I think from an offensive perspective, it's the ability to start fast and have consistency coming out in the first quarter. That's been an issue for this offense throughout the season. You know, I understand sometimes in a football game at every level, you have a three and out to start the game. And that happens. But it happens too much with the Bears. And I think if you watch them early in football games, they really lack rhythm as an offense, both from a play calling perspective and an execution perspective when you look at the players in the football field. So what do they have to do to start faster, to have more production early in the first quarter, and to sustain drives early in football games so they can establish a sense of tempo? That has to be done this week against Washington. Look, Dan Quinn has done a great job with this football team. He, you know, the new head coach in Washington, brings a ton of energy, especially to that defense. No, I do think this is a secondary you can go after. I really believe that. You can challenge this secondary. But Dan Quinn will do some different things. They're not a heavy blitz team, but they will give you multiple fronts. They'll give you overload looks. They'll bring simulated pressure. So still a lot for Caleb Williams to read out post-snap in this football game.
He's been so much better against the blitz. I mean, the numbers just show night and day where if your quarterback can get to the point where you're playing with fire by blitzing him, you know, this is, and I keep mentioning Aaron Rodgers, but that's the guy who Caleb Williams said that he wanted to model his game after. You know, there was a point where Aaron Rodgers just wanted you to blitz because he knew that he had the numbers.
Yeah, and he is getting much better at that. And that's, again, Dan, that's an example of a young quarterback growing every week, developing every week. Again, not being perfect. We can go back to the game against Jacksonville when he missed the deep ball throw to DJ Moore. You got to hit that one, right? You have to hit it, but he missed. But the ability to bounce back, to have a negative play, and continue to play at a much higher level throughout the football game. It's your point about the pressure. If you're going against a quarterback that can see pressure, get it out, find his outlets, and also pass catching targets that can make themselves available to the quarterback versus pressure, now you got a really good thing.
We're waiting to see what happens with this injury report, specifically on defense and making sure guys get back for the Bears. If they can't get their full complement of players back that they suffered going into the bye, how concerning is that going up against an offense that, with or without Jaden Daniels, I mean, they've looked pretty good, number one scoring offense in the NFL.
Yeah, you want your guys back, but, I'll say this. If it is Jaden Daniels, he's really fun to watch now. And I tell you what, you can go back to Daniel's tape at LSU. He's an excellent thrower from the pocket. You have to start there. You look at the concepts they ran at LSU. Those are pro-level concepts in terms of the type of route structure they had. And that carries over into the NFL. And look what Cliff Kingsbury has done. They really have meshed the pro style with the college spread offense together. You know, more RPOs, getting the ball out on time, a lot of quick game throws. And Daniels has been so efficient throwing the football. I mean, he really sees it well. He throws with accuracy and location. He can push the ball to the third level. And I'll tell you right now, when he is deployed as a runner, whether on design rushes or scramble attempts, he is absolutely electric. Electric in the open field. So that creates issues for you from a defense perspective. He's up and he's playing this week because now it changes what you want to do in terms of your game plan. What do you do on 3rd and 7 to 10? How are you going to keep him in the pocket? And also when he's in the pocket, he can work to multiple levels as a thrower. So an excellent football player has had a great start to the season.
When you talk about the Bears getting off to a great start offensively, can you do that somewhat artificially? Because every time they've gone no huddle, it has coincided with the way they've talked about finding a rhythm or finding their mojo and all these sort of these nebulous euphemisms they use. But I know there's a purpose to the hurry up, and that is to dictate personnel. So, and then obviously field position early is going to matter, and they've talked about that. How does that idea fit in, or is it overlaid with the concept of scripting plays early to get a look at what the defense is showing you?
I think both work. When you go up tempo, that puts enormous pressure on a defense in terms of getting the right personnel in, being able to match personnel in the field, especially when you go up tempo with movement, shifts, and motions. That creates a lot, that forces the defense to communicate. That's what you want to do to them. That allows you to really dictate tempo at that point. But, going to your point, Dan, about scripting plays, what scripting plays really is you're basing your play calling off defensive tendencies. If you're in two tight end personnel, this is how the defense is lined up to it based on the previous four games of tape. If you go three wide receiver personnel, this is how they line up. This is the personnel they bring in. And then you work off of that, saying, okay, we're going to go double tight end personnel in plays 1 and 2. And then if we get positive plays, we put ourselves in a position to have a manageable third down, we're going to go to 3 wide receiver personnel. We know we could run these routes because this is how they defend those concepts. And that gives you kind of a structure moving forward. Now, can the structure change? Absolutely. That's the part about scripting plays I think needs to be said. If you get behind the sticks, if you're in 2nd and 15 or 3rd and 11 plus, well, that script doesn't really work all the time, right? So to make it.
Did we just lose Matt? I think we just lost Matt. And
Okay,
hold on.
Reset this,
if
Dan.
If you're watching on Twitch,
you probably saw, like, why are these guys look like they're.
What the hell is going on here? Am I dreaming this or am I on mushrooms or something?
Was that a pig?
Yeah, a pig in a wagon was just brought into our studio while we were on the air
for a photo op
by an enormous man in a white tuxedo,
looking like Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard.
What the hell is going on here?
So
at one point, I'm talking to Matt Bowen about the
trying to get the offense started a little quicker and using. Yeah, it was a lot. So
I thought it was a dog.
Yeah, and then because it looked furry, and I was like, wait a minute, that's
and it was a pig.
And I saw the snout, and I was like, that's a pig.
And then that guy came. Okay, I swear to God, logic to this whole thing. All right, Matt Bowen, we're here. Sorry we lost you for a second. Things just got really funky in here for a moment.
What are you guys talking about?
I don't know.
A pig. basically, a man brought a wagon in here, Matt, with a pig in it, and we were dumbfounded as to what was going on.
A live pig that was in here oinking in a wagon. And he brings it in, and then they took a bunch of pictures of it, and they gave the thumbs up, and they left.
I was like, are these Washington Commanders fans, the Hogs? I didn't know what was going on,
I
Matt.
I understand if we're at a Super Bowl on Radio Row, and that happens.
You see crazy stuff.
Yeah, all the time, but not like, we're not on Radio Row.
Matt, no, you see that stuff at Beef Days in Solon, Iowa. That's where you see stuff.
There you go.
Matt, I'm really interested. I think that's been one of the main weaknesses, flaws, what you just talked about with the way that they have started games. We had Herm Edwards on the show yesterday. That was yesterday, right? Yeah, Herm Edwards was on yesterday, and he was talking about the difficulties of being the head coach and also being the coordinator, whether on the offensive or defensive side, and talking about Matt Eberflus having a lot of responsibility and that can be a lot. And I've looked at this game as a, to be cliche, measuring stick game for him, because to my knowledge, this is the biggest game that he's played, that he's coached in as a head coach here with the Bears. There's meaning now. They're trying to make the playoffs. There's a lot going on right now. And they haven't been successful on the road, 3-16. And also, fourth quarter issues have been a thing for him, even going back to last season. I throw out the first season because it was an obvious tank job. What do you look at this game as for Matt Eberflus specifically, going up against a high-scoring defense? Whether, you know, Daniels, if he plays, obviously he won't be at full strength. But the premise there still lies there, right?
Sure, you have to win on the road because you have two winnable games coming up. And you look at the rest of the schedule, things are going to change, especially when you get into division play and how the schedule is structured with so many division games the second half of the season. You have to put yourself in position to manage those games. Understand that you're not going to win all of them. They're going to have some. You're going to have some losses against when you're playing Detroit, Minnesota, and Green Bay twice each. So you have to look at that part of the schedule and say these are the games we have to win. Doesn't matter if they're on the road. We have to win these football games. And look, I went through it with the head coach of the play caller. One of my first year in Washington, when Steve Spurrier was our head coach, he was also the offensive coordinator, and it is a lot because at times different parts of your team can suffer. What I mean by that, it's not done intentionally. There's just so much focus put on one side of the football, right? And in Washington, for us, it was obviously offense, and we struggled on defense. We really struggled on special teams because I don't think there was enough attention to detail there throughout the week of practice and in our offseason prep. But I think Eberflus has done a good job of managing that, especially when you see the how this offense has developed over the first six games of the season, what they can do on special teams and the personnel they have on special teams. But this is a game. If you're Matt Eberflus and we're judging a head coach coming off a bye, especially, you've had 2 weeks to prepare for Washington, 2 weeks of tape, and you might go against a backup quarterback. So this is a game you should go out to Washington and win.
We have some breaking news on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.
Washington Commanders have hit the practice field today. No Jaden Daniels, but Adam Schefter reporting that Washington plans to attempt to try to practice Jaden Daniels on Friday.
Right. And that's pretty normal in terms of the return to play protocol when you have that type of injury. You're not going to practice today. You're not going to practice. I understand not practicing today and then you try to get on the field tomorrow. And he has enough game experience already to where if he gets one solid practice, then I think he's going to be okay to go. Now, the difference is if he doesn't go, okay, if Mariota's a quarterback, I think the offense changes a little bit. Mariota, I think he'll be more RPO-based, packaging plays together, run and pass at the same time, not as many outside-breaking routes. I think when he throws the ball deep and outside the numbers, that ball loses steam a little bit. He doesn't have the arm talent of Jaden Daniels, but you can scheme him as a runner. That's going to be regardless of which quarterback is playing this week. The Bears have to have a plan for the quarterback design rushes because they will be in that game plan.
Matt, what did you think of the reserve secondary pieces that were forced into action last week? We saw Josh Blackwell. We saw Elijah Hicks. And with these the remaining, the injury situations with Brisker and Gordon, respectively, they may be out there again.
Yeah, I thought Blackwell did a really good job, especially as an underneath defender when they were playing their zone coverages. He had the interception. That was classic cover two. It looked like a defensive back individual period. Get to depth, eyes on the quarterback, have transition speed coming out of your break and make a play on the football. Hicks, the one touch on the head in the end zone, I thought the corner could have got more depth and Hicks could have squeezed more to the route. But this is what you look for backups. Did they make plays? Did they make so many negative plays that you hurt your defense? They did not. That's the first thing, is that they look like they belong, okay? And what I mean by that is you can put them on the field in any game situation. They're going to be alignment and assignment sound. They're not going to give up explosive plays. They're going to do what they're taught in terms of the coach technique, and they can help your defense win a football game. It doesn't mean they're going to be playmakers. because they're not the level of Brisker and Gordon. We understand that. That's why they're backups. But you can put them in a football game and you can win a football game with them. And look, this is what you have to have. I've always said this. When you're building a roster, you can never have too many defensive backs. Never. One, it makes up the majority of your special teams units, especially your coverage units. But also, when you play in your sub packages, when you have five and sometimes six defensive backs in the field, you know going through this stretch of games, you're going to have guys that are going to miss time. You have to have backups that can come in, show they belong, and play within the scheme. And that's what those two players did.
You talked about the importance of this game because it's a road game. And also with that division schedule coming up on the back half of the schedule, I'm curious as to your thoughts. Obviously, we saw the Lions play the Vikings. We saw the Packers beat the Texans. How hard of a climb will it be for the Bears to get into playoff position?
I think it's going to be a challenge. I think Detroit right now, along with Kansas City, is probably the two best football teams in the league right now. And I say that about Detroit because they are so physical. They're playing much better in the secondary this year, taking the football away. And they can control tempo on offense. They can run the ball with power. They can run the ball to the perimeter. And you have to be honest about Jared Goff right now. I mean, he is really dialed in as a thrower, really dialed in, maybe playing the best football of his career. I think Minnesota is a challenge, too. Sam Darnold has been very good in that offense. Justin Jefferson can break a game open at any moment. They have been more balanced run-pass, which I expect them to be more passive this year. And Brian Flores has done a great job with that defense. That is going to be that's going to be a fun game to watch for Bears fans, to see what level Caleb Williams is at in terms of his ability to read post-snap movement. Because he's going to get a ton from Brian Flores with all different types of pressure. And with Green Bay, Matt LaFleur's offense, especially what they've done on defense this year, new defense coordinator, much more aggressive, playing more man coverage. Xavier McKinney might be one of the best offseason additions we've seen this year in the NFL, what he can do taking the football away. So, you know, to answer your question, it is going to be a challenge. I think this is the best division in football right now. And again, it's still early in the season, but right now it's the best division in football. And every game gives you a different challenge because they're all so schematically different.
Matt, before we let you go, we were spending some time listening to what DJ Moore and Keenan Allen were saying about Caleb Williams coming into his own as a leader and as a rookie, and how you almost forget that the guy's a rookie because he is leading the team. What rookie were you around who you just knew was different, that you knew, like, we're not going to make carry our pads, or we've got to listen to what this guy has to say? Whether it was on offense or defense, was there anybody that just kind of had different rules because they clearly were a step ahead of the usual first year?
Yeah, that's a very easy answer for me. It was in Washington with Sean Taylor. There's no question about this. Sean Taylor, his maturity as a football player, his football character, and the production he could make on the field. What he could do as a football player was something I've never seen at that position. And to do it at such a young age was pretty remarkable.
And then it establishes, even with the veterans, it doesn't take long for you to realize, look, this guy has earned our respect in a way that maybe another wouldn't.
Yeah. And it's, let's be honest, this is a production-based business. It's a business of winning, and those who produce and do it at a consistent rate are viewed much differently. And when you can do that as a rookie, that is something we don't see very often. What Sean Taylor did in Washington and what Caleb Williams is doing right now in his last couple football games, you have to respect it.
Matt Bowen, thanks as always.
All right, guys, thank you.